weeks. As we mentioned on last Sunday's programme, the news was announced last week of the passing of historian David Fitzpatrick. And we're going to spend the rest of the programme tonight looking at his career as an historian. He was a pioneering scholar who published on a really incredibly wide range of subjects. And we're going to begin with the voice of Professor Fitzpatrick himself. And this is a clip from a 2008 programme called Our War, The Great Debate. It was a radio forum, which I chaired at the time, on the subject of how we remember World War One. It derived from the John Horne edited volume Our War. And here David Fitzpatrick is talking about Irish memory, our memory of World War One, and rejecting the idea that there was a great forgetting or amnesia of the conflict in Ireland.
We have greatly overemphasised the degree to which this epochal event and its impact upon the Irish people has been ignored. And I'm attempting to popularise an alternative word, aphasia, representing loss of speech rather than loss of memory. It was as if there was a conspiracy throughout 26 counties of this island not to utter, not to give voice to the collective memory which was ubiquitous. So aphasia, I do think that there was a loss of speech. And that loss of speech was most common, I fear to say, among my own kind, among historians.
And you can see there that he spoke as well as he wrote, David Fitzpatrick, talking about aphasia and an inability to speak or communicate with regards to Irish memory of World War One. I must say, an idea that struck me at the time and has resonated in the years since then. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Fionnuala Walsh, lecturer in modern history at University College Dublin and a former student of David's. On the line from Oxford is Professor Eunan O'Halpin of Trinity College Dublin, where David worked for almost 40 years. And also joining us on the line is historian from London, is historian Roy Foster, a great admirer and a great friend of David Fitzpatrick. And Roy, let's start with you. We heard there, David, speaking about our memory of World War One, and one of the things that comes across is how articulate and how penetrating he was.
Yes, what comes across there too is, I think, a brilliant comprehension of psychology. He was a very good psychologist. One of the things that made reading him a delight and an unpredictable delight was the way that he could arrow in on the way people thought and sometimes the way people deceived themselves. His first great book, Politics and Irish Life, really started me thinking about revolutions as generational experiences ages ago. This was 40-odd years ago, and I still remember reading where he wrote that revolution offered people involved in it a route of escape from their parish and family. They went on the run, not only from the police, but from their childhood. You know, nobody was writing about the Irish Revolution like that then. And his influence is so strong because his perceptions were so unique and so powerful.
He was somebody who was fascinated, I think, by conspiratorial groups, whether it be in Politics and Irish Life, which was about Clare, whether it was about the IRA in Clare, whether it was about the Masons or the Orange Order. He was very interested in how people came together.
Well, he was fascinated by the way people linked together and the way that social bonds brought people into strange associations. And of course, his very last book, published when he was very ill, on Ernest Blythe, showed an extraordinary, you know, world of people who, like Blythe, could be members of the Orange Order, but also hardline Republicans. I think also Miles, a book which shows this psychological apprehension of how people operated together, was his great book on emigration, Oceans of Consolation, where again you read things like, I'm quoting from this, like marriage, emigration was expensive, premeditated, calculated, and the outcome of negotiations involving a wide circle of interested relatives and the collection of extensive evidence concerning available options. Unlike an Irish marriage, it was also reversible and repeatable.
Fionnuala, you were his student. His impact on mentoring the next generation of historians has been profound, hasn't it? It's really an important part of his legacy.
It really is. I think it's one of his most significant legacies. As well as teaching many undergraduates in Trinity College over the 40 years he worked there, David also supervised over 20 PhD students, many of whom are still working in academia today. And he was a really a really hands-on supervisor. Took a really rigorous approach to our scholarship. Always challenged us to think big, to be ambitious, to be brave with our scholarship. But he could be a difficult taskmaster. He could be critical. But he, above all, was incredibly encouraging, both during the PhD process and in the years on the job market and years afterwards.
You didn't even have to do a PhD to benefit from that kind of mentoring, because he was very much involved in something in Trinity over the years, the history workshop.
That's right, yeah. So in the 1980s, he taught an undergraduate course, the first of its kind in Ireland, on Ireland in the First World War. And this led to the first Trinity History Workshop, which was a group of his undergraduate students who together produced a book, which he edited, called Ireland in the First World War. And it was the first edited collection to look at Ireland's experience in the First World War. And over time, that workshop produced four books, and David edited three of them. Most recently, of course, Terror in Ireland.
And, I mean, your subject area, your thesis was on the impact of the Great War on women in Ireland. So he was an obvious port of call,
I would imagine, from
the beginning.
Yeah, I was very familiar with his scholarship before I ever met him. And he profoundly influenced the work that I did. His work, there's no First World War scholarship in Ireland which is not profoundly indebted to him. And he shaped my thesis to a very large extent. But he made me the historian that I am. He challenged me to think big, to be brave, to be ambitious.
Eunan Halpin, you worked with him for many, many years. Did he similarly challenge his colleagues? I mean, I know he had he could have a quite laconic delivery, but also a very astringent when it came to methodologies, and an opinionated man.
In terms of methodology, David was extraordinarily rigorous, and I think to some extent what Roy said is entirely true, and what Fionnuala said, but it's underpinned. David did not make generalizations that weren't based on very detailed micro studies. I think in that he was enormously influenced by his own background, that he had a very strong interest in social and economic data. So he wasn't simply writing from, as it were, from the heart or from what people said in letters home or whatever. He was also looking at people in terms of who they were, where they belonged in a family, where they belonged in society. So he said he was coming from the sort of, I would say, from an almost Marxist training in historical analysis, but he was able to marry that with an insight into individual personality, and as Roy has said, into the dynamics of groups and so on.
And how did his ideas on the revolutionary period jibe with your own ideas on the revolutionary period? Because that's a period that with which, you know, I would very much associate you. And if those ideas, did those ideas clash from time to time?
I'm sure, yeah, of course they would clash in detail and in general terms. I think, for example, David was far more aware and mindful of the Ulster issue and of Northern Ireland. We think of David as an Irish historian. He was an all-Ireland historian. He was, as Roy has mentioned, his interest in the Orange Order and so on. He absolutely looked at things on an insular basis. And to some extent, I think he was inclined, perhaps less in writing than in discourse, to downplay the sort of aspirations of the Irish Revolution and so on. But if you read what he wrote, as distinct sometimes from what he said, I think you'll read something, stuff which is very often persuasive, which is very rigorous, which isn't polemical, and which is, if you like, highly scientific in background.
Okay, we've heard Eunan and Roy both talking about Oceans of Consolation. We're going to hear another clip from David now. We found this in the RTE Radio Archives, taken from a 1983 documentary called Irish Down Under, examining the historical experience of Irish emigrants to Australia. And in this extract, David is talking about the upward mobility of those emigrants.
In countries like the United States or Britain, strongly entrenched establishments were successful in largely excluding first-generation Irish emigrants from the best and most desirable jobs and residential areas. But in Australia, the Irish arrived before any native establishment had been erected, and the Protestant aversion to the Papist swarm was ineffectual. The most spectacular feats of Irish upward mobility were, it must be admitted, generally accomplished by Protestants from Ireland, including the many otherwise unemployable surplus graduates of Trinity College Dublin, who came to dominate the Melbourne bar and public life.
Roy, how important were his own origins in Australia to him? Because we mostly associate him as being a student of Irish history.
They were very important. He came from a very distinguished intellectual family. His sister is a very distinguished historian. His father was a distinguished Australian intellectual. He also came to Ireland through Cambridge, which is important. And he was somebody who was very internationally minded. When I think of the work he was producing in the 70s, I think of books like Eugene Weber's Peasants into Frenchmen. I think of Benedict Anderson's Imagined Communities. He was that kind of mind, and he always looked outside Ireland. The other thing I completely agree with what Eunan was saying was that he was an absolutely ferocious analyst of statistics, which you often think of as making a boring historian. It had exactly the opposite effect with him. Mm. But great articles like On the Disappearance of the Irish Agricultural Labourer or The Geography of Irish Nationalism were grounded, as his very recent work was, too, in statistical number crunching, which he brought in near genius to.
OK, that's unfortunately all we have time for. There's so much more we could say about David Fitzpatrick's life and work, but time is against us. Fionnuala Walsh, Eunan O'Halpin and Roy Foster, thank you very much for joining us this evening and sharing your reflections and memories of the late David Fitzpatrick. My thanks tonight also to Mark McGrath on sound and our researcher Liz Gillis. Our readers this evening were Mark Manning and Colin Flynn. The History Show is a Pegasus production for RTE. From me, Miles Dungan, and producer Lorcan Clancy, goodbye and thanks for listening.
Follow us on Twitter at RTE History Show.